Okay, so the moment we've all been waiting for. So the person that's going to speak tonight, where I think we're in for a real treat, first of all, I've been commanded she's hot. I mean temperature-wise. Warm in here? But anyway, what a great, solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're in for a real treat tonight. Just a real steady, good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Have the privilege of getting to know her. So without any further ado, Vicki, come on up.
And it wasn't quite a hot flash. It really was warm in here. Well, my name is Vicki, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Vicki.
I am very privileged to be here in front of all of you guys. I really am looking forward to telling you my story, and hopefully you get something from it, and if not, you wasted 45 minutes, and you will get it back. Well, you won't get it back, but hopefully you'll learn something from something that I said, and for the newcomers, hopefully you'll see that if I can recover, then you can too. I was born in Bakersfield. So let's start with the Bakersfield jokes. Okay. I have all my own teeth. So, that's a plus. And my mother was married when she had me. That's another. That doesn't happen often in Bakersfield. I was born in the very late 50s, almost close to the 70s, you know, so that's really late. I had one older brother that my mother had from a previous marriage. She was 16 when she had that one, and he was 5 years older than me. After that, I had a younger sister who's 2 years younger than me, and then another younger brother who was about 8 years younger than me. I don't remember a lot of my childhood, and whether it's because I was born in the 50s and I'm getting really old and my memory's going away, or because of things that happened to me, I can't for certain say, and I'm not going to spend a ton of money with a psychologist putting me to sleep trying to figure out what it is. It is what it is. I don't remember a lot of my childhood. I have been told that my father was an abuser. And I couldn't ever figure out why. I mean, I was his first child, and why would you beat the first child? But later on, when my sister was in her late 40s, we found out that my mother was not as much of a prude as we were always led to believe, and she had an affair. And my father was in prison at the time for petty theft. And she got a little lonely and found something and someone, and that's how my little sister was born. And I think that instead of taking his anger out on my sister, which would look wrong to my mother, it was taken out on me. But that's, you know, just what I think. Who knows? I also had an older brother that sexually abused me. My first recollection of it, I believe I was about 2. After that, I have very few specific memories of it. I went on for a very long time, but I don't remember the incidents. It's just, I know they were there, but I don't remember them. I also have a grandfather that was a pedophile. And that was found out by one of my uncles, because one of my cousins turned him in, and my grandmother begged my uncle not to turn him in, so they didn't. So it continued. I don't believe that I was abused by my grandfather. I always felt that I was, he always told me I was his favorite grandchild, so maybe I got off off the hook that way. I don't know. I do know that my sister was. And that was a problem for me later in life. I never could understand why, when things went wrong at home and my mom felt that she needed to get care for us because her and my father were splitting up, the girls would be sent to my grandparents' house. If, you know, so you know that's going on, why would you send the girls to the grandparents' house? Why not send the boys? But that's not what happened. She sent the girls. But, you know, that's just the way that it was. And I have not asked that question. I've not been able to get myself to ask that question. My mother never mentioned it. The only mention of the sexual abuse with my brother after it was found out, he was sent away for about a year. He sent to live with my grandparents. One pedophile, go live with another, and let's fix them both. But when they came back, or when he came back, I was sat down, and I was told that nothing like that better ever happen again. So I've always felt it was my fault. I mean, I've done enough reading and all those things to know that it's not my fault. It's the pedophile's fault. But you still feel responsible. It's something that you did that caused it. My mother did remarry when I was in the eighth grade. And right after that, we moved over to the beach. My stepfather had a really bad car accident on the 166. He happened to be drinking at the time, and he dropped a cigarette and went to pick up a cigarette, and his car went off the cliff and rolled and rolled and rolled, and it messed up half of his face. Half of his face is paralyzed, and he has a patch over his eye. Everybody, all of the grandchildren think that he's a pirate because he has a black eye patch. But he had problems with the heat in Bakersfield, so we moved to the coast. He was an alcoholic. He still is an alcoholic. He does not drink very much in these days. I mean, he's 81 now, and he just, because of health reasons and diabetes, he can't drink. My mother was an alcoholic, though it was really hard for her to admit. After my parents divorced, she had us four children to raise, and she worked as a cocktail waitress. So we would be home by ourselves all night, and that's when things happened that shouldn't have happened. And then she would come home and she'd sleep all day. I never remember my mother without a screwdriver in her hand, whether it was driving in the car or going to the grocery store or just being in the house. There was always a screwdriver in her hand. And a few years ago, I asked her about it and said, Mom, did you ever think that you were an alcoholic? She said, well, one time. She said, I was working, and the patrons of the bar, they would buy the girls drinks. You know, you deliver a drink, they buy you a drink. And she had gone up to get another round of drinks, and the bartender said, Shirley, do you realize you've had 13 drinks? And she says, no. And he says, I think you better slow down a little bit. But I don't think it made her slow down. She finally had stomach problems, ulcers and things, and she had to stop because she couldn't drink anymore. But she was definitely an alcoholic. How I managed to not start drinking as a child, I have no idea. I mean, the alcohol was always available. I always seem to be hiding. I'm a really good reader. I can get lost in a novel. That's what I did. That was my escapism. And then I started learning to cook. My mother didn't like to cook, and so once I got into high school, I took over all the cooking. Once I got my driver's license, she opened me a checking account so that I could do all the grocery shopping and all the cooking. And I enjoyed it. So I was either in the kitchen or reading a book. And those were my two ways of escaping from all the problems. I never felt like the pretty sister. My younger sister was always taller and blonder, and she had pretty green eyes, and always had tons of boyfriends. I just didn't have the boyfriends. I don't know if I just didn't put myself out there enough. I certainly didn't put out, and maybe that was the problem. I won't say what my sister did. So my sister was definitely more promiscuous than me. But I remember a time my senior year we moved from Grover Beach to Tippisgay. My parents had an opportunity to buy some property outside of town near Colton Canyon, and so they bought property out there. And the lady that lived down the road from us, Shirley Weber, she had an older, I don't know what he was, uncle-in-law, somebody that lived with them, and I would bake pies for him. And they had a lemon tree, so I would make lemon meringue pies for him. And she told me, she says, "Vicki, it's a good thing you can cook, because you'll be able to catch a man with your cooking. Your sister is pretty. She'll be fine. She'll get a man because she's pretty, but you'll be able to get a man because you can cook." So that was always in my head too, you know, those things. I'm not pretty, and I didn't relate well to others. So right while we were out there, we did a lot of partying, the group that I hung out with. We would take the bus to school, and I don't know how much you know about Tippisgay, it's a long ways out there. And we would have to be at the bottom of the road to catch the bus at 6:30 to get to school by 8 o'clock. So you could do homework, but you get to know everybody on the bus and, you know, what was going to be going on that weekend. Well, we would always go to the Los Alamos Men's Club in Los Alamos back in the 70s, mid-70s. And they allowed us children to drink. They wouldn't sell us drinks, but they overlooked our drinking in the parking lot. It was okay. And I do not know how I drove home. I didn't really care for the taste of alcohol that much, but I did what everybody else was doing, and I got shit-faced. And on our way home, we lived a mile off the road. Does anybody know where TV Peak is? And what's the other place that's back up in there? I can't think of the name of the place. It's like an old-timey town back up in there. But that's the road we lived on.
Muscle Fort.
Yeah. We lived on the same road as Muscle Fort.
Yeah.
And right past the Weber's house, there was an abandoned car. And we would put our alcohol in the abandoned car because you're not going to throw it out. I mean, you just couldn't do that. But we would hide it really well in that abandoned car. And that went on for a couple of years. But then I got married and moved away. And I remember several years later, my mother asking me or telling me, she says that the boys from down below had been walking up the road and they got in and started just checking out this old car and found all this alcohol in the car. Well, she thought it was the older kid that lived down the road, and I at the moment I didn't tell her the truth. I said, "Oh yeah, I guess that's where he hid his alcohol." But I eventually did tell her the truth and tell her it was our alcohol. I said, "But we couldn't bring it up there." But I remember coming home one time and my sister having had too much to drink, and she's out front puking her guts out in the flower bed. And my dad, who'd been drinking, wanted my mother to smell her breath to find out if she'd been drinking. And my mom says, "If I smell her breath, I'm going to puke. She has a really weak stomach." And my mom, my mom had been a few years since she'd been drinking. So my father knew she'd been drinking, but without actual proof, you know, she got away with it. But we would still suffer because of it. And my dad's idea of punishment was painting the porch, the front porch. We had this huge front porch. And we would start painting, and he would stand in the kitchen with his cocktail in his hand, watching us and directing us on, you know, you missed a spot, you missed a spot. But it was dip the brush, paint the stroke, dip the brush, paint the stroke, just over and over and over again until we get it done. Well, about an hour later when it was dry, he didn't like the color, so we had to start over. But that was his way of punishing us. We didn't get beat. We didn't get grounded very seldom. And I, you know, other than drinking, I really didn't do anything wrong. I never did drugs. Drugs is not a part of my story. I mean, I did smoke pot occasionally, but it wasn't anything that appealed to me. And I never even have snorted cocaine, ever. It just, sticking white powder up my nose had absolutely no appeal to me. Then I got married at 19. I got married. A lot of it was to get away from home, but I did love him. And but I was, other than weekends, I didn't drink. And then we had kids right away. We got married December 26th, the day after Christmas, and the following December 6th, my son was born. So I was pregnant the whole time. And then once he turned one, we got pregnant again, and then I had my daughter on Halloween, and I didn't drink. Drinking wasn't even something that I thought of doing, so I never would have considered myself an alcoholic. Even thinking back then, the word would never have been applied to me, because my parents, yes, they were alcoholics. I just drank when I went to parties. I got really drunk, but I wasn't an alcoholic. And then it got to the point where, you know, we'd go out. My husband drank a lot. He would drink quite a bit. But I didn't like the taste of anything. But we would go to the beach. We'd take the kids to the beach. And we would stop at this liquor store, Spyglass Liquor. And he found these drinks called California Coolers. Does anybody remember California Coolers? It's a malt beverage, and but very mild. And I could drink those. I managed to like the taste of that. And then somewhere along the line, I don't know how, I started liking scotch. It's what my dad drank, so that's what I like to drink. And so we would go out to my parents' house every single weekend for a barbecue, and I would drink out there. And my mom remarked to me one time, and I don't know, I have no idea how much I'd had to drink. I couldn't even tell you. But she says, "Vicki, you're the soberest drunk I've ever known." So I could, you know, even at that time, I could really hold my liquor. But I wasn't drinking consistently. It was, you know, on the weekends we'd drink, or I would drink. We'd go out to a party, I would drink. During the week, I didn't drink. I had raised my children, and they didn't see a drinking mother. They didn't have a drunk mother. And it was just as the years go by, it was just more of a habit. You just keep drinking, you know, a little more here, now this, a little more at this party, and then you have a little bit of a hangover. So in the morning, you got to have a little bit so you can get going, and because you got things to do, and you can't be throwing up and laying in bed all day long. You've got to get your butt out of bed because you've got to take the kids to have their animals weighed at the fair or whatever it happened to be. Also during that time, I went to work at Coca-Cola. That was in 1983. It was a great job. It was a great company to work for. And I was, at the time when I got hired, I was one of three women. We had 56 employees, and I was one of three women. Odds are really good that way for women. And I loved it. And a couple of years later, I became the office manager. And then there were 2 years that I was the only woman in the office. So you get a lot of attention. And I'd gone from getting no attention, just being the person that was able to bake the pie to catch a man, to getting a lot of attention. And I wasn't used to it. But I didn't do anything you know, that I shouldn't have. Well, if he'd been watching, he would, my husband wouldn't have liked it, but it wasn't like I slept with somebody, you know. A little hug, a little kiss, you know, whatever, you know, just little things. But, but it got to the point where I was going out with the guys too much. And, I mean, every day after work, we would go over to walk over to Shaw's, because that's where, with the Coke building, if you know where it's at, the old one is, the Discovery Museum, Shaw's just is right there. You know, we just walk over there. And there was myself and half a dozen guys, and we go over there almost every single night after work and drink. And Tom started getting mad about it, and I just... I said, we're not doing anything wrong. We're just having a few drinks. I wouldn't invite him to come, but we're not doing anything wrong. So one time I went home, and all my clothes were at the bottom of the stairs. I couldn't understand why. So what I did is I turned around and left the house and went and got a hotel for the night. He tracked me down, and I went back home, and everything was... We kissed and made up, and I promised to not do it as much. And I did. I followed through with it. I didn't do it as much. I wanted my marriage to work. I didn't want to ruin my marriage. And then, you know, life just kept happening. The kids got older, and the more I didn't have to do for them, the more time I had to do something else. And I would drink, but I would drink at home. And I never thought of myself as an isolationist drinker, because I love parties. We had parties, a lot of parties. And that was a great time for me. I loved planning the parties. I loved doing all the cooking for it, getting everything all cleaned up for it, being the hostess with a great food, and that's when I would drink. And then we would have friends over on weekends just to play cards, and that's when I would drink. And then my kids move away from home. My daughter moved to Oceanside, and my son moved to South Dakota. And they both said they were never coming back home, that they did not want to live in Santa Maria because there's nothing to do in Santa Maria. So they were gone. My son was gone for a year, and he came back for a year, and then he left, and he went back again for a year. My daughter stayed gone for 2 years. When my daughter did come home, her older brother was getting married, and I was getting ready to have a hysterectomy, and she was losing her job. The restaurant that she was working at was closing, and she was also working in a grocery store, so she figured it was a good time to come home and help Mom. And it worked out really well. She did come home and help Mom. And the night of her brother's wedding, she got reintroduced to a boyfriend from high school, who she eventually ended up marrying. So they both managed to stay in town, which is where I wanted them to be anyway. But, you know, they still didn't need me. So I still had so much time on my hands to drink. And I would drink with the guys at lunch. We decided lunch hours are a really good time to drink. We would go to the office, and they knew what we wanted to drink when we sat down, which isn't really a good thing if anybody's sitting around watching. We would sit down before we even ordered our food. Before she brought us menus, she brought our cocktails. And that later, I will get to that, but that got us in trouble. But, so we would drink at lunch, and then I'd get home and we would drink at home, and, but I still didn't go to the bar. The bar wasn't a place that I really wanted to go. Anytime that I went with my husband, I didn't know the people. I felt like an outsider. They played all the dice games. Sarah, I know, knows all the dice games, wherever Sarah's at. I didn't know how to do any of those things, so I really didn't like going to the bar. But when I was growing up, I had neck problems my whole life. It was something I was born with. The doctor thinks that my mother fell in a well when she was pregnant with me, and it did something to the curvature of my spine. And if you were to look at my x-rays, you'd wonder why I'm not in a wheelchair. I was not allowed to do PE in high school. I can't run. It puts too much, it's just jarring, too much jarring. I wasn't supposed to go on roller coasters, which of course I did anyway because I love roller coasters. I just love to scream. But more about that later. You know, it's just those are the things that I wasn't allowed to do. And one night in bed, I reached up and something pinched, and it I got a herniated disc. And I suffered that way for a couple of months, and I would walk around like this. And I was on really strong painkillers, not drinking very much, but the strong, really strong painkillers. And decided to do surgery because that was the best way to get me out of the pain. And they went through, if you look close, or even if you're not even that close, you can see there's a pretty good scar here. He went in and he fused three discs. There's a metal plate and four screws. I woke up just totally out of pain. It was just like turning the light switch off. Or on, and it was amazing. I was out of pain, but I had to wear a neck brace for 9 weeks, and I could not work. So my husband would take me to the bar to get me out of the house, and the coachman. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the coachman, and at this time it was on Broadway. By Stoll, and we lived on Windsor, which is the same street as Adam's school. So in a pinch, you can walk home instead of driving. I've done that a couple of times. But he would take me there. I learned all the dice games, learned all the, you know, bartenders, and learned to have a really good time drinking at the bar. And then I finally realized why he liked being there. And I thought it was just because he didn't want to be at home. Because at the time, my daughter and her family were living with us because my son-in-law had lost his trucking company. And so all four of them, the two girls, the grandchildren, and the parents were living with us. And it was too much for Tom. So he would stop at the bar every single day on his way home from work. But now he would come home and get me, and we would go back to the bar. It didn't really go over well with my daughter, because we would get really, really wasted, and things happened. I fell downstairs. How I didn't kill myself falling downstairs, I don't know. I get up in the morning and think, where are my glasses? And I go looking around downstairs, and they're in the corner somewhere, and I say, how'd that happen? And Amy says, you fell down the stairs, Mom. Oh, well, nothing's broken, so I guess it's okay. But the granddaughters were watching. And but I didn't care. I figured they're young. They're going to get over it. You know, it's not really that bad. It doesn't happen that often. But it did happen pretty often. And then in January of 2011, my job was eliminated. I'd been there 28 years. And I'd been told for, I can't even tell you for how long, everybody always said, Vicki, you don't have to worry. Your job is secure. You are the glue that holds this place together. They will never, ever get rid of you. There's no way they could do this place without you. Well, nobody's indispensable, regardless of how indispensable you think you are. There is nobody that's indispensable. And so I was offered a job in Ventura. I could take the job to oversee both branches, but I would have to be in Ventura 95% of the time, and they would not pay mileage, and they would not pay me to stay down there. And at that time, gas was pretty high. I don't remember what it was, close to $5 an hour, $5 a gallon. And it was would have been a significant cut in pay for me to run both branches, and a really a lot of wear and tear on me, and I just didn't think I could do it. So I turned down the job. So I got a year's severance pay, and then I got 2 years of unemployment after that. And my husband said, you don't need to look for a job because we don't need to make any more money. And I said, okay, I guess I won't look for a job then. So we discussed what I was going to do. And I said, okay, well, I'll mow the lawn. I had never mowed the lawn. I didn't even put gas on my car. But I'll pull the weeds, and I'll prune the roses, and I'll keep the house clean, and I've got projects that I want to do. I want to paint this, paint that, you know, whatever it happens to be. And that went on for a week. And I decided that, I could sneak off to the bar by myself, because I wasn't going to the bar by myself. I would go with him. And so I started going to the bar. And I would sit there all day long, and I'd make sure that I got home before he got home so that I could make dinner and have dinner ready when he got home. And then he felt sorry for me because I'd been sitting home all day by myself. And, you know, with nothing to do but watch Bold and the Beautiful and, you know, wash a few windows. So we would go to the bar. And I don't know how he didn't know how much I'd had to drink. I have no idea. But he didn't. But my drinking escalated. I was drinking so much. At the time, I'm a picky scotch drinker. It's like, I don't know what to relate it to, but like if you drink Budweiser, you like Budweiser. You don't want to drink Corona or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Well, I liked Clooney Scotch. And it's not an expensive scotch, but it's what I like to drink. So the places that I would hang out at, like the Coachman, he carried it for me. If we were going to go to the Swiss, I would make sure and get a hold of the bar manager, and they would order it for me. The manager of Jocko's, he ordered it for me. They carried it at the office. Any place that I liked to drink, they would carry it for me. And at one time, they carried it in the grocery store, and then there was something with it, and it wasn't going to be carried anywhere anymore at all. But you could still get it from whatever company it is that distributes alcohol. I can't think of the name of it. Southern Wine and Spirits. Pacific, whatever it is. But my friend Lance at the Coachman would order it for me by the case, and then I would buy it from him. And then there was one other place in town that I could buy it, which was Dino's. And he would order it by the case so that I could go in there and buy it from him. And I would, when it was at the grocery store, it was easy to make it look like you weren't drinking so much, because you could go to Vaughn's, you can go to Albertson's, you could go to the liquor store, Sclary's carried it, or Spencer's, you know, there was different places you get it. Well, when you got to where there weren't so many places that carried it, you looked like you were drinking a lot. And I was drinking a lot, no doubt. It ended up ruining my marriage. I was bored and unhappy. My whole life had been Coke. That's where I got my interaction with people. That was my fix, was going to Coke every day for work. And the fix that I was getting in the bar just wasn't enough of a fix. So I found a boyfriend. And it was great. It was really great until my husband found out. And that didn't take too long for him to find out. And he didn't really like the idea very well. It really did not go over very well. And but I promised him that I'd stop seeing him. And that lasted about 2 weeks. And then I just decided that I'd been unhappy with Tom for so long that I couldn't see a fix in it. I didn't see, we didn't talk about marriage counseling. We weren't religious. I had nobody to fix that, you know, help us fix it. So to me, the best way was to get out. So we both ended up deciding we wanted a divorce. And I moved in with my son for a while. And while I was looking for a place to live. And boy, that clock is moving fast. But it lasted just a couple of months, and then we had a huge falling out. And amazingly, when we had our falling out, the only person that I could get to come get me was my ex-husband. So he came and picked me up and took me to the house. And but I only stayed there a couple of days, and then I stayed with my daughter. I was buying a place, so it didn't take too much longer until I got my home and had a place to live. And my divorce was final December 1st of 2012. And about 2 weeks after that, I met a man. And to me, he was perfect. Cute. I'd never been attracted to bald men, but it did not bother me one bit that he was bald. He was 13 years younger than me. A lot more stamina than some other person. Not to say that there's, you know, that that's a worldwide or room-wide problem, but let's just say it was great. But he fed my alcoholism. He was an alcoholic as well. And he would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was almost like an alarm clock. 2 o'clock in the morning, and he'd say, "You want something to drink?" And I really wouldn't want something to drink. And I'd say, "All right." He'd come back with a couple of beers for him and two drinks for me. Two drinks minimum in my house. You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I have a two drink minimum. So you can see how much I was never sober. I was drunk all the time. And not too long after that, it was actually the end of April, he was in a bar at the Swiss, and somebody hit him, and he fell, and he hit his head. And he lasted 3 weeks at Cottage Hospital, and he died from his head injury. And I went off the deep end. And I had already been a blackout drinker, and I had seen green men, but I saw a lot of green men during that 15 days. I was never sober. And somehow, though, on May 21st, my eyes opened, and I said, "I can't do this anymore." And I called my daughter. And my daughter knew who to call. And three women, two women I know for sure came to my house, Pam being one of them, and Heidi, and for a 12-step call, what I know now is a 12-step call. I didn't know then that that's what that was. But and they helped me get into Cottage Hospital, and I spent 5 days there, and then I went to CRC and went through their program. That's where I met Bob, and that's where I got sober. And I can tell you the first 6 months of being sober, I was still in a fog. I went to meetings. I did my 90 meetings in 90 days and made sure that I did everything I was supposed to. I didn't want to drink. I think I was just done. I'd done it for so long, and I looked back at it and how disgusting it was and how disgusting my life was, and I didn't want to do it anymore. Yesterday, I celebrated 20 months, so I'm getting close. I'm getting close to my 2 years. My life, I can't say my life can't be better because it can always be better, but it's pretty darn good. I'm looking for a job, and I had a temp job for 4 months, which went really well, And I had an interview last week. I have two interviews scheduled this next week. And I meant to say this when I came in here. I was talking to my son before I got here, and we were talking about the interview, and he says, "Mom, you just kind of, it's like you're a shrinking violet." He says, "You just need to go into your interviews, you know, with lots of confidence." And he says, "Just like you're meeting tonight." He says, "You just walk in there," and he says, "Walk like you got a real big one." And I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't have one of those. I don't have any boobs. I don't have a butt. I don't know what I know." But anyway, I thank God for this program, a God that I didn't have before, I have now. And when you look at the steps, alcohol is only mentioned twice, but God or a power greater than ourselves or Him or His. Is mentioned a heck of a lot more. And this is a design for living. It's not just a way to get sober. Yes, we get sober if we follow these steps and do them correctly and listen to the people around us and come to the meetings and come to the speaker meetings and do the things we're told. But we get a better life out of it too. And that's what I feel that I have now, a better life. And without all of you and keeping me on the straight and narrow, because I don't want to disappoint any of you. I don't want to get drunk and kill myself or kill anybody else, but I just can't imagine wanting to disappoint in any of you. And so I pray every day for this program and for all of you and for me. And thank you for letting me share, because this has been the quickest. I have a can I be the 2-hour speaker next time? But thank you.
Let's give Vicki another round of applause.
All right, well, it's 9 o'clock if you're here again.